it's got to this point where not only are consumers transactional with their products, but brands have become transactional with their
manufacturers.
Do you ever think about where your clothes come from? Who made them and how long it took them to make it? That's exactly what we're talking about today, manufacturing in the fashion industry. Welcome to Good Good Great. My name is Alshay Bani. In this podcast, we talk with the people behind the ideas, businesses, and brands working to improve the world around them. The first industry we talk about is one of the most polluting on the planet, fashion. Whether we see ourselves as fashionable or not, it's something we come into contact with every day. We're going to be speaking to the people at the forefront of this industry about their experiences, the issues they've come across, and how their work is trying to improve it. Over the last 3 years, Flora Davidson, along with her partner Gus Bartholomew, have been trying to help brands have a stronger relationship with the people that are making their clothing and build transparency into that whole process. Back in 2016, they started Supply Compass with the vision of creating the world's most transparent and trusted supply chain. That's why we invited Flora to talk to us today. She's speaking about the thing we all too often ignore. On this journey, she's been confronted by the impact that manufacturing has, whether it's on communities, on the environment, or the bottom line.
Just the headphones.
Great.
Cool.
Okay, good.
So I started today with a question I've always wondered about. How many people does it take to make a t-shirt?
So this is actually a question I asked one of our factory owners last week. And he, in one of our t-shirts, I was like, how many people have touched that? And he said, 100. And I was like, what? But then I spent this whole week with a film crew. We traced the entire organic cotton supply chain. And we went right back to the farm in Telangana, in this tribal area near Adilabad. And it was really fascinating because I hadn't been to an organic cotton farm before. And to see how many people alone at the cotton boll planting stage, the cultivation stage, how many people touched it there. And then we went to the ginning unit and there was, you know, probably about 15 people touching along there. 100 makes sense. So I think it's 100. That's my educated guess.
I think a lot of brands are now releasing their stats around what manufacturers they work with, the list of materials that goes into everything. Should that be the norm? Should that be the new expectation for everyone to have that information?
Yeah, I think that it's a really good starting point, transparency, because if in order to be transparent, you have to go and ask those questions and you have to trace it back. So this is where we want to get to, is that when you produce a product through us, just by the very nature of using our platform, the whole product is traced. Because you've used a supplier that's in our digital database, you've used a button that's bought through our marketplace, and we have visited and vetted those places and will continue to do so. It's a verified, traceable supply chain, but it's not necessarily scalable for every product, for, you know, to have a team in a company to do that for every single product. It doesn't make sense because they had to fly to every single one of those locations where everything comes from. So it's thinking about how technology can just do it almost by default. And that's where the operating system for supply chains needs to be central.
So building this platform that enables an entirely transparent system, how do you get manufacturers on board with that?
From the very start, we were talking about technology needing to be at the core and around, you know, we were basically came to them saying that sustainability, transparency is not a trend. This is a fundamental transformation in the way of doing business that it may be nascent and in its early days and not taking off properly yet. And you know, we would get feedback from factories saying that people have been talking about it, but no one's actually doing anything. So we're not interested in it. But we kind of came to them and said, look, we're going to build this platform. Stay with us. We may not come back to you for 2 years, but just believe we're going to get here. Do you want to be on this journey with us? When you ask a factory, what's your biggest challenge? And they go, finding brands that are right for us. A good relationship needs to have lots of things right for it to make it work. So we said, like, we will bring you the right brands and we will make them really efficient and effective and easy for you to work with.
So Supply Compass is almost a dating app between manufacturers and brands. What's the process you go through when you start working with all of your partners?
So we vet both sides. We vet brands we work with and manufacturers because it's not fair to just vet one side of the kind of the relationship. Building good relationships is quite visceral as well, and it's human. You know, you can tell when you spend time with someone if they're good people or if they're not so good people. And so we spend a lot of time with factory owners and also see how they are with their workforce as well when they walk around the factory. So we spend time in the factory, we spend time in the factory owners' homes, and we meet their families and things like that. So we kind of do this full approach of assessing if the partner, we're kind of looking for a good partnership long-term. And if they really believe in doing things transparently and in working with sustainable materials.
So what's it like visiting factories?
My favorite part of my job is being inside factories, without a doubt. And every single one of our team, it's their favorite thing as well. A lot of our team have worked inside factories themselves. Some of them, families even own factories. So it's in the DNA of our business. You see photos of factories, you see videos, and you have this impression of what a factory is like. When you're in there, it's this really bustly, quite energetic environment that, if it's done right, can be a great place to work. But, you know, we went to a factory a few weeks ago in southern India, and they were experimenting with this new setup of production line where everyone was facing each other, which was for efficiency purposes. But everyone was having a way better time because they were looking in and they could actually like have eye contact while they were producing clothes. So, yeah. Love it.
Do you think all brands care about what manufacturers they're working with?
I think that it's really hard when you're a brand to care 100% of the time because you have a million and one things to do. So we understand that. I think what's important is those initial kickoff months with brands, and all of the ones we work with really do care. Otherwise, it would be really hard for us to, because we're suggesting a slightly different way of working to how a lot of brands work with their other supply chain partners, and there's more setup. So if a brand isn't up for it and doesn't believe in it, then they would drop off early doors with us anyway.
So how can brands help their customers understand that manufacturing process better and help them make better choices?
So we've just started working with filmmakers to create content on the supply chain because we realize that we're in this unique position where we've got these great relationships with these factories. We can actually, with our team, shoot content that is accurate and truthful and, you know, consistent. So this is something that we are now starting to offer. Yeah, and I think as a brand, like if you're going to do great stuff in your supply chain, you should communicate it. And the more that consumers see about supply chains, the more normal it becomes to see inside a factory. A lot of customers don't know how a t-shirt is made. And if they just start getting used to seeing that, then they'll start asking questions and kind of almost like by osmosis start absorbing these things.
And from a manufacturer's perspective, what's the most compelling argument to get them to be more responsible and ethical? Is it a financial argument, or is it more of a social and environmental one?
For me, it, hand in hand, it's got to make sense on both sides. And for us as a business, our why we exist is really to make sustainable sourcing efficient and cost-effective, because unless it is cost-effective, people won't do it. So it's got to be the same price or cheaper, otherwise it doesn't make sense. You won't get adoption in the same way. The kinds of factories that we're working with who've been leaders in the space because they've been doing it for the last 5 to 10 years, it's in their heart, and you can see that.
What's the big vision for Supply Compass?
The big vision really is to build an ecosystem for the sourcing industry. So I would say really it's that the dream for me in 5 years would be that, you know, any product made through Supply Compass has a scannable tag, or if we're thinking more futuristic, just like inbuilt, you can see every single part of that product, where it's come from, and for there to be a story with it. And that just to be default, so that brands don't have to spend loads more time and money on doing that, because that's just taking away from their profit and they need to exist.
And is face-to-face a big part of this vision?
It will always be integral. And actually, interestingly, when we were raising investment, it was the bit that investors would say to us, that's not scalable. And we would say, well, this business won't scale unless the human part is there, and we will always have to stay there. And visiting people face-to-face hasn't stopped really successful businesses from making money in the past. We're really focusing on growing our team in manufacturing locations, India to begin with, so that it's just FaceTime and using technology to, when you can't visit face-to-face, video calls. So we're building video calls into the platform so that brands can at least see the face of who's producing their clothes, because often, you know, they won't have ever seen what even the merchandise in that factory looks like. So it will continue to be crucial. And so our kind of challenge is, how do we scale human face-to-face contact relationships?
Is the understanding of being a responsible and ethical manufacturer the same around the world?
A lot of the certification bodies are global and universal. You you know, GOTS, for example, the Global Organic Textile Standard, is found now all over the world, and it's just the same criteria wherever you are. So yeah, that's helpful. I mean, there's so many different certifications out there. So what we kind of try and do is, like, it can get overwhelming for a brand. They're like, I need this. So we kind of sit down and go, what do you actually need and why do you need that one? Because actually you're not going to get one factory with 15 different certifications, because they'll be bankrupt by the time they paid for all of those. So it's really about matching a brand's, you know, not every brand needs and wants the same thing. There's obviously a social compliance that is just a base level, but on top of that, you know, not every factory is looking to tell the story around a carbon neutral factory. Maybe another wants to be working with a local community or preserving a heritage skill. So it really just depends on the approach of that brand. In the end, ultimately, it would be great if everyone is ticking every single box, but we're just not there yet.
So we all hear of stories of brands taking advantage of or exploiting manufacturers, but what happens when it goes the other way? How do you make sure everyone's being looked after?
So my business partner, Gus, was an engineer in his life before. And in engineering, there's engineering principles when you build a building, which is like you do this, 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 and this stage, and then you can't go into the next stage until you do that and that. And that's how you build a building. So we've brought those same principles into production, which everyone kind of knows. It's just no one sticking to them. So we have set up a standard way of working and then built our technology around that. And there's gateways. So you can't request your lab dip until you approve your swatch. And this is why, because otherwise manufacturers do all this work and then a change will happen and there's always wasted material because of last minute change, which isn't sustainable, but it's also not cost effective either. So
I wanted to ask you about on demand. There's a lot of talk about the future of fashion being made that way, so brands only make what people order instead of buyers guessing. How do you think that's going to affect manufacturers moving forward?
There's all this conversation around on-demand manufacturing, which is really exciting, but the reality is it's still a long way away. So what we've really focused on is the design to production process is really, so when people think about lead times, they often think from when you place your order to when you get your product. But yet there's these months and months before you place your order, which we really want to get down to a couple of weeks so that you could design your product in a few weeks and then place the order. Because actually that's where there's a lot of time and back and forth wasted. So that's where we're focusing on as a business, is the design and sampling part.
Why do you say it's a long way away?
The reality is that supply chains are just still so fragmented and so offline, and that they haven't got this digital core. So to then place all these exciting technologies on top, if you don't have a digital framework, a supply chain operating system underneath it, then it's really, really hard to do it effectively. So it can just be this, you know, exciting project that works in part of your collection. I mean, I think really exciting to see brands like Tommy Hilfiger who are going fully digital in their sampling process. So they have really rethought that. Like, that it's pretty transformational what they're doing. So at the moment, I think 50% of their samples are digital samples. So they show digital samples to buyers and they only order what has been approved as a digital sample. So I think businesses who start thinking like that can be the ones who can adopt more innovative manufacturing processes, I think.
So Tommy Hilfiger is a big brand with a lot of money to innovate, and this will be, I'm sure, the ambition of a lot of the small and medium brands you work with. How can they grow without compromising on their manufacturing?
Well, I mean, in our network, we have factories of all different sizes. So we have manufacturers with 50 employees and we have manufacturers with 3,000. So we would help them grow within our supply chain. So if they outgrew a factory, we'd move them onto a larger one. But the chances are a smaller factory, if they would want to grow with that brand, that's the best option. That's how big factories get big, is that one brand really helps them grow and they invest and take, you know, really grow and build new machines and buy, you know, expand their production lines for that brand.
So I wanted to ask you more broadly, what are the changes that you've seen in the manufacturing side of things over the past few years? Where do you think it's all going?
Sustainability is really a huge opportunity for innovation. And I think that's what's really exciting. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot of our manufacturing owners and new businesses starting up. They're seeing the opportunity in it because it can be a win-win on both sides. I was just at a circular economy event in Mumbai a few weeks back. And what is clear for me is that there's a lot of work being done that's not actually being talked about. You know, there's India's really pushing for solar panels on the roofs of all factories. There's a lot of focus on dealing with the waste. So I think something that we're interested in seeing is supply chain waste. So it can be that up to 30% of the material of a product is wasted on the cutting floor. And that fabric, now we have a partner who takes that fabric and brings it back and they make new yarn out of that waste. And that's really good quality, pure like waste, which doesn't need to be, you know, sorted through by lots of different people. So it's really good quality. I think from a logistics standpoint, moving waste around the supply chain is something that we're seeing really exciting networks be set up there. We've gone down a compostable polybag route. So we're looking at packaging within the supply chain, not just from an end consumer perspective, but like the amount of samples sent back and forth. We're now developing our own compostable mail bags because the DHL bags are the single-use plastic, but you have to use their bags because they've got this window. So we're looking to make our own of that. I mean, the biggest change is really a mindset change from factory owners that I think everyone's really starting to feel, particularly in the last 6 months, that there is a shift from discussion towards action from a brand's perspective.
If there's one thing that you'd recommend for brands to think about when they're starting out, what would that be?
I sometimes think that people don't think long-term and strategically about their supply chain, that it's often just like, can you make my product at this price? Rather than like, is this a relationship for long-term? If you look at your business plan and you think, I'm going to be making this product also in my range in a couple of years' time, is this going to be the right person for it? I think that it's just not focusing just on unit price, and particularly actually with a first collection for a new brand, I often suggest making in the UK and getting it right here and, you know, being close to your product. The thing you need for your first collection is a great product. You're not going to make much money then anyway. So get it right and be close to your production. And then when you need to scale, then look to scale elsewhere, wherever that may be.
And what do you think is the key to progress in the sector? What is the one thing that you wish for?
The thing that would really accelerate process is policy change, not just in the, like, not just government side here, but in India as well, in manufacturing countries, because that just accelerates things years forward. It happening in other sectors, I feel like if it's happening elsewhere, then fashion and the homeware sector can almost like see where other industries have got ahead and kind of be excited by it. We need to see behavioural change happen across the supply chain and across brands. And that's the hardest thing. And that's, fortunately, the tide is moving in our favour, is that, you know, people are starting to change their mindsets. And we as a business alone can't do that. So you need a kind of groundswell. And so that's helping. I've never doubted the business itself needed to exist. And I feel as passionately, probably if not more now than I did at the start.
That's where we wrapped up our conversation with Flora about manufacturing. Building transparency in the supply chain and manufacturing of fashion is a work in progress. But when you approach it like Flora and Gus, by focusing on face-to-face connections, on understanding the approach of the brands and the manufacturers on an individual basis, that work starts to have momentum. Supply Compass is building that groundswell. We need companies like them to really change the fashion industry. You can request a demo of how their platform works, so head to supplycompass.com to find out more. As Flora mentioned, thinking long-term and strategically about your supply chain is something that few fashion companies are doing or doing well. That's why in the next episode, we'll be chatting with Tom Kay, the founder of Finisterre. Tom is someone who has been thinking about these issues from the very beginning and is pioneering responsible business. You can find out more by following us on Instagram at good.good.great. A massive thank you to Hugo and the team at The Fisheries for hosting our recordings. Thank you to Flora for sharing her wisdom. And thank you to Dave Williams, Hallie Husted, Pro Constantino, Ruth Steen, and Ben Siri for making Good, Good, Great possible.